Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Banking Matters. I'm your host, Daniel Baker. Joining us today, we have Carrie Philippi. Since 2018, Carrie has been a managing partner at Bridge Financial Consulting Group, LLC. Prior to starting Bridge Financial Consulting Group, Carrie worked with the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, or OCC, for over 20 years as an examiner, commercial credit examiner in charge, and assistant deputy comptroller. Before joining the OCC, Carrie worked as a bank examiner for the Farm Credit Administration at the Nebraska Banking Department, and he has degrees in finance and economics from the University of Nebraska and from the Graduate School of Banking. We're excited to have Carrie on the show. Carrie, welcome.
Thanks, Dan. I really appreciate it.
So, Carrie, I'd like to start by giving all of our guests kind of a chance to introduce themselves about how they got started in the financial world to begin with. So, Carrie, how did you get started in the financial sector?
Well, as you mentioned, I graduated from the University of Nebraska back in late 1979. And I knew I kind of wanted to get into banking as part of my career path. But interestingly enough, one of my advisors at the University of Nebraska suggested to me that it would be best if I wanted to get into banking to start as a bank regulator, because you see the big picture quicker.
Yeah.
And, but the piece of advice he gave me is don't stay there for more than 3 years. Then you got to get into banking. Well, that part of it I didn't listen to very well. And part of the reason for that is that at the state of Nebraska, at the time I hired on with the state banking department in Lincoln, Nebraska, for those of you that are my age, probably remember that those were tough times in banking. Mm. I mean, we had banks closing right and left in the early and mid 1980s. The ag crisis was horrible, and many of our bankers in Nebraska were heavily concentrated in ag lending. So I had to learn quickly. They threw me in the water, and it was a matter of swim or sink. And I struggled, and I learned, and I swam, and that experience was a phenomenal experience. It was tough, but I'll tell you, you learn banking better in that environment than you do any other way, because back then we had infinitely more banks back then than we have today because of the mergers and consolidations that have taken place. Mm-hmm. But back then, even in our smaller communities in Nebraska, we oftentimes had two banks. And one weathered it just fine. The other one failed. Mm-hmm. And so I learned from an early age, there's a right way to do things and there's a wrong way to do things. And the principles that bankers exercise and the discipline that they have in banking makes all the difference in the world. Well, then I got a call from the Farm Credit Administration, coincidentally, unsolicited, I might add, mm-hmm. and 6 years later, and they were having the same problems with the farm credit system. And they said, well, you know what? We just now have arm's length regulatory authority, the same as you had at the state and the FDIC and the OCC. We need somebody here that's experienced in that arena to come over and help us with the farm credit system. So I jumped ship. I left Lincoln, moved to, first to Omaha and then on to Bloomington, Minnesota, Minneapolis, St. Paul, where for the next 10 years, you know, we dealt with trying to shape up the farm credit system. And then at that point in time, I had a tragedy in my life. My wife died of cancer at the age of 38. I had three small children. The oldest was 8. The youngest was 2. And I felt like I needed to get back to Nebraska. And that's how I got started with the OCC in 1998. And I've been in a number of field offices since then, about 6-7 years in Lincoln, again, in Lincoln and Omaha. And then Charlotte for a little while, Dallas, Fort Worth, and then my final stop was in Tulsa, Oklahoma, where I ended my career as assistant deputy controller.
Wow, that's quite the adventure. I mean, been all over the United States, multiple different examiners' positions and everything. Never quite made it out of the examiner roles, I guess you can say, or in the oversight roles into banking like you advised. But that's quite the story.
Yeah, it's been very interesting. It's been a very good and rewarding experience. And, and over the years, you know, you pick up things. You pick up a lot of experience. You see a lot of different things. You know, a lot of our bankers have always told us, even when we were regulators, that one of the advantages we have in our business is we see a lot of different ways of doing the same thing. Because we see a lot of different bankers, a lot of different strategies executed and fail. And so we do, we cross-pollinate, if you will, you know, sharing our knowledge and experience of what other bankers, is not that we're that smart. It's just that we've seen a lot, and we've seen bankers that are very innovative and have learned to do things the right way, and not, and, mm-hmm. and we've seen also bankers do it the wrong way.
So let me jump in then really quick. So you mentioned, I mentioned that you were the managing partner at Bridge Finance and Consulting Group, which is what you're doing right now. And you work with Tom. We actually had Tom as a guest on our podcast a few weeks ago. But would you mind just giving like a surface level oversight of what Bridge Financial Consulting Group is?
Well, our primary mission set out as being, you know, given that Tom and I are both long-term bank regulators by trade and have that experience, what we initially have sold our clients, and they bought it, is, you know, we have firsthand knowledge of how to deal with a bank regulator. And so mm-hmm. if you get a situation where you get in trouble, you know, you do have some sort of a supervisory action that's taken against the bank, and we do have those clients, some of them. You know, we're pretty knowledgeable about the things that the regulator is going to be looking for in order to most expeditiously mm-hmm. get out from under that additional supervision. But, you know, interestingly enough, the vast majority of our bankers are what I would consider best practice bankers. And what they're really looking for is the types of things, the types of strategies, the types of analyses and systems and controls that need to be in place to make them a best practice bank.
Right. And to really take them above just following and doing the right thing.
They're not reactive bankers. They're very proactive bankers. And they're looking for, you know, ideas on how to better skin the cat and how to be successful long-term.
So that's perfect, because that transitions into just like exactly what we were going to be talking about in this episode, where when we were talking about topics, one of the things we had discussed was ways to assess risk on a CRE portfolio. What are some of the best practices, or what are some of the practices when it comes to assessing risks on a CRE portfolio?
Well, I'll tell you what, Dan, timing is everything when it comes to managing risk in a portfolio, and being on top of how the risk is changing in that portfolio is critical. So, you know, there's not one answer I can give there, but mm-hmm. I think that the most important thing I would say is, you know, you've got to adapt your risk controls and your identification methodology, the resources that you have in the bank. You can't skimp on the resources necessary in order to make sure you fully identify the risk in your portfolio. Understanding, for example, the portfolio, the commercial real estate portfolio mix you have. You know, as we've seen, COVID, I mean, has, you know, there's a lot of bankers that went in with a concentration on office commercial real estate lending. And look what's happened to office commercial real estate lending as a mm-hmm. result of COVID. Almost overnight, that demographic changed. And we went from, I don't want offices anymore. Now I want warehouses. And that happens fairly quickly. So, I mean, staying on top of and being astute to what is the mix of your portfolio, where is the risk concentrated, and how am I going to monitor and control that risk is critical. And the biggest thing that we're seeing is the speed with which interest rates have risen has caught even our best bankers a little off guard. You know, in the last 18 months or so, you know, not so much recently, it slowed significantly in the last year or so. But prior to that time, some of our bankers were growing their commercial real estate portfolio by upwards of 20%. When you're growing your real estate portfolio by upwards of 20%, your resources are primarily focused on growth and probably secondarily to post-funding analysis and risk control. Mm-hmm. Well, then we get to a point where we start slowing in the business cycle. And I think we probably saw some bubbles in the economy due to the stimulus that went into the economy. It's a little, that some of them were a little slow in transitioning from a growth cycle to a risk control cycle. And that's mm-hmm. why, you know, you and I have talked earlier about the importance of executing your strategy at the right time. I mean, you've got to, in being proactive, it's critical that you're sensitive to when we're nearing the end of the business cycle, when it's contracting, and focus your resources on risk controls. We have a lot of, we're still looking at loans in banks' portfolios that have a 3.5% interest rate on them. Mm. And the bankers successfully did a stress test at the time they were underwritten, but they stressed them at 300 basis points over a 3.5% interest rate that's getting ready to reprice. Well, you know, from 3.5% to 6.5%, we're at 8.5% prime, and most of these borrowers probably don't qualify for prime. So, you know, they haven't updated that stress to really get completely on top of the throughout their portfolio of just exactly how pronounced has this interest rate rise had on the debt carry of some of their customers. I'm still not sure they fully appreciate in every instance just exactly, you know, what the implications of some of this are. We're doing a lot of stress testing for a lot of our clients right now just to give them a flavor for this is what's happening. We'll stress interest rates, we'll stress cap rates, we'll stress net operating income. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing, particularly on office products, that the net operating income that the appraiser used in 2022 to assess the
not
value
anymore.
It isn't there. And yeah. So the implication is that real estate probably isn't worth what it was when the appraiser just appraised it even a year ago.
So let me jump in really quick because you mentioned something actually that I want to ask a question about. You mentioned the importance of knowing when to transition from one cycle to another cycle. So from a growth cycle to a stress testing cycle. What kind of indicators would you be looking for to know when that transition should occur? Like what are you looking at? Are you looking purely at the market? Are you looking at the performance in the bank? What kind of indicators would you want to see?
Well, I think you've always got to be cognizant of when you believe, as an astute banker, bubbles have formed in the economy. Mm-hmm. And that really gets at long term, you know, is the cash flow going to be there to service that level of debt? And when interest rates got to 3%, especially in like residential housing, for example, I mean, most people know about what happened to residential housing. You know, there was, you know, we had demographic issues associated with some of that younger generation living in apartments coming out of 2008 when real estate values were terrible, particularly mm-hmm. residential real estate. All of a sudden now they've got families. They decided they wanted a house. They wanted to move out of an apartment into a house. Interest rates were down to 2.5-3%.
Nothing.
I mean, that results in a pretty steep rise in rates. And, you know, you look at it and the way I look at it is I think about, well, if you had to rent that property, could you sustain the cash flow on that rental property at normal interest rates long term? If not, then I think the astute banker is going to start saying, you know what, I think we're getting a little frothy in this market, mm-hmm. and so it's time to maybe start thinking about paring down our resources in growing, and start thinking about enhancing our policy controls to require more cash in the deal up front from the borrower, mm-hmm. more robust stress testing, you know, all of those types of things that you do when you're expecting to come to the end of the business cycle, a contraction, an economic contraction. And now it's about staying on top of the risk you've already booked. Yeah, it's critical that you get this. Most successful bankers are astute at making that transition from a growth cycle to a slowing cycle, from stepping on the gas, knowing when to step on the gas and when to put on the brakes.
So really this is going to come down from like the top down though. Like this is going to come from like the board, the president, CEO and whatnot. They're the ones that are going to be implementing these kind of changes and strategies. Is that correct?
That's correct. That is correct. And those are the individuals that primarily are hiring consultants like us
right.
to come in and do that work for them. Yeah.
So then let's talk about actually the process of executing some of these strategies. Because I know we touched a little bit on the timing of it. So I'm assuming you walk in, you develop a plan. It's like, hey, look, like we've done these testing. We need to look at making these kinds of changes. Is that what you do? You recommend changes to do based on the testing you do? Or do you just primarily do the test and leave the changes to them?
Well, I think the first thing we do is, you know, we look at the mix of the portfolio. You know, I've indicated, you know, most of our work is in commercial real estate. We don't do a lot of consumer lending. We don't do a lot of mortgage. We do some, but most of our most of our work is risk assessment of the commercial.
Your bread and butter. Yeah.
Yeah. And so the first thing I want to know is, you know, what is the mix of the portfolio? How much, you know, we definitely are seeing riskier segments of the commercial real estate portfolio than others. You know, I mentioned before that Class C office space is a much more risky asset today to have a loan on that than it is to have a loan on a warehouse. I haven't seen a bad warehouse loan in 3 years. You can practically put up a warehouse and it's going to cash flow because that's what the demand seems to be right now. Yeah, that's what I want to know first. And then what we'll recommend and suggest is that, you know, the regulator tends to be focused on the amount of commercial real estate loans you have on the books. But in my judgment, the biggest issue is how is that portfolio mix and how much of the portfolio is in the riskier type asset class today? For example, if you've got a lot of Class C office space, you better be watching that pretty close, because especially with interest rates having risen the way they had, leases aren't, the occupancy isn't where it was projected to be. I mean, some of those deals are not where they should be right now, and they're nowhere near generating the cash flow that they thought they were going to generate, you know, at underwriting. So my recommendation would be, let's focus on those assets first and making sure that we get to the bottom of the risk there first, because, you know, and in my judgment, you know, the banker that's going to survive and play another day is the banker that is the most astute at recognizing these things before their competition does. I've often said to bankers, you don't have to be perfect. You just have to be one step ahead of the competition. And what that means is, you know, you've got to be willing to invest in the controls and the resources to make sure that you are astute enough to know where your risk is. You identify that risk, you quantify that risk, and you have a plan in place to capture, particularly on these borrowers. You know, they oftentimes are doing business with multiple lenders. So the first one to get the cash is the one that's going to be successful. The last one that recognizes that they've got that risk is going to be left holding the bag, probably going to end up inheriting some real estate they don't want and probably taking a loan loss.
So then how do you implement that plan though? Cause I mean, so you mentioned that the first thing you do is you dig to the bottom of the risk. You do your testing and everything. What's next? What comes after that process?
Well, the next thing is that, you know, we'll do an assessment by loan of what is the cash flow? What is the cap rate? We'll stress that cap rate. We'll stress the net operating income. And we'll also stress the interest rate, and we'll see what does that imply is the value of that real estate today, and are they above or underwater on that deal if this scenario unfolded. And then what we'll do is when we complete that, we'll roll up any loan that we project. And we usually do it in what we call a moderate stress and a severe stress. Right. And then we roll all those results up and we determine what we call an earnings? Does that result in an earnings event? In other words, is the loss going to be limited to just earnings for this year and next year? Or is it actually going to require losses that cut into capital? So is it a capital? And we want to avoid a capital event.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah. So that's basically how we do it. We call it a macro stress test. You know, you start with a micro stress test. In other words, stressing individual commercial real estate loans, and then you roll that up.
So then, at that point, you would take that and you'd hand that off to the board or to the CEO or whomever, and then they would develop their plan of action and what course they're going to take from there.
Yeah, we would essentially summarize the risk in a report to them. We detail, you know, what the implied collateral value is on every loan we stress, every commercial income producing commercial real estate loan we stress. And then we give them an assessment of where their risk is focused. It's pretty easy. We make it a point of breaking the risk assessment by loan type. So office buildings, warehouse, they're all separate proposals, and they can readily see by looking at that report, okay, our greatest exposure, in other words, the greatest roll-up of loss is in this particular segment of the portfolio. So it gives them that dimension, first of all, and then we'll make recommendations for how best, you know, to manage that risk going forward.
So then let's take a step back into your OCC days, if that's all right. In today's environment where you walk into a bank and you're starting – an exam, whatever you would traditionally do, what would you be wanting to see in today's market from the bank you're looking for? Are you wanting to see that they're leaning more conservative, or that they're running more middle of the market? What would you want to see as an examiner?
Well, right now it's our view, and I think most of our bankers hold the same view, that we've definitely seen some economic contraction in the last year to 18 months. They know interest rates have gone up significantly. Most bankers are telling us that they have dramatically slowed their loan growth. Not all of them. Mm-hmm. Some of them are still putting on probably a little more volume than we're comfortable with right now. But that's the first thing, is as again gets back to knowing where you are in the business cycle, the economic cycle. We'd want to see them starting to focus less on loan growth and focus more on making sure that you've done your annual post-funding risk assessment on your largest borrowers. You've re-stressed them.
Go back into that cycle we talked about.
Come back and you stress them at current rates, not what they were 2 years ago. And you get a feel for where is that borrower. And I think it's important in those cases to have a banker to try and put yourself in the position of that borrower investor and think about, well, given where interest rates are right now and given how far away I am from what I originally projected, I thought I was going to make my way of a profit on this deal. How likely is that borrower likely to walk into our bank someday and hand in the keys because they can't do it anymore? They're underwater. Yeah. So, you got to look at it, a lot of different ways if you're a banker. And, bankers provide a really good service to these customers too, because you inherently are going to have customers that are a little slow at putting on the brakes and wrecking. Most banks, most of our good bankers have customers that you don't need to tell them when to slow. They have a good sense of that.
They can read the market.
And when interest rates are 9% and they were 3%, they're not interested in taking on more debt. They're not interested in doing more business. They're ready to slow down. But you've always got a few of them in there that, they're a little too greedy. You've heard the saying, pigs get fed, hogs get slaughtered. And there's always borrowers that are slow to recognize that the good times are over and it's time to start being a little bit more sensitive to your controls, tightening your policies, underwriting credit to only your best gold-plated, cash-rich borrowers, and let the rest of them walk.
So then I'm gonna transition really quick into kind of a slightly off topic, but one that I'm curious about. What's the secret to working with an OCC examiner? So, I mean, is it just having a good relationship with them, being open with them? But what's the secret to working with an examiner?
Well, I tell you, it depends on the examiner. It really does. When it comes to the OCC, there was a long period of time when they weren't hiring. And so what you've got is you've got a bunch of seasoned examiners that have been around for a long time and have seen a lot. And those kind of examiners you're going to deal with a little differently than you are one that's still pretty green. Examiner that's been on 3 or 4 years, they have no idea what interest rates could do. I mean, they're starting to see it now. They've never been through a downturn. So, I mean, how you deal with those. But, here's the thing is you on this side of the fence, the regulator, they have all the power, and some of the younger examiners are not very astute at knowing how to use it yet. They got the big hammer and they wield that, when in reality, what they should be doing is working on their skills of persuasion to try and help these bankers along, give them the benefit of what they've seen and how to do this better. And what we do is, we may not always agree with the conclusion of the regulator. But that doesn't matter. What our approach is, we just want to understand what you're thinking and why you're thinking that, and what does our client need to do to satisfy your concern here? Because our goal
is communicate.
It's about communication. It's not about power. It's not about wielding your experience. It's about understanding what it is they're after, and as astutely as you can, position the bank to address those needs as quickly as possible and get back to the business of banking.
I love it. That's perfect. Well, Kerry, unfortunately, we are actually out of time. But I did want to give you the chance. If you had one piece of advice that you would give to our listeners today, and it can be about anything, what piece of advice would you give them?
Well, I think given where we are in the business cycle, my advice is, you know, don't scrimp on the types of controls that you need when the economy is contracting. So The bottom line is, do what it takes to stay one step ahead of the competition and be in the game another day.
I love it. That's perfect. Well, Kerry, thank you very much for joining us for another episode of the Banking Matters podcast. We appreciate all your experience and the knowledge you brought to the show today. So thank you very much.
Thanks, Dan. Appreciate the opportunity.
For the rest of our guests listening in, that's Banking Matters.